This is Classic Grain Hamcast number 24, posted July 25th, 2020. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. In this Classic Grain Hamcast, we'll bring you three audio items, all from 1988. The first is a short 1988 interview with Jim O'Connell, W9WU. O'Connell is a Chicago trial attorney who, over the years, has represented many Midwest hams in antenna litigation, conducted and introduced by RAIN founder and producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP.
The proliferation of litigation in the amateur service is a growing concern, especially to Chicago trial lawyer Jim O'Connell, W9WU, who handles zoning and other amateur litigation in his spare time. Who's to blame for the current rash of lawsuits in ham radio? O'Connell says, the media.
People sit home and watch People's Court and Divorce Court and whatever else, you know, and they say, ooh, that looks like fun, and they rush to the courthouse. I think the very basic cause of this is that people think, oh, wow, look how easy that is. I go to court and I get some money. Well, it's not that easy when you get into it. You know, the newspapers always make a big deal about the big personal injury settlements, that sort of thing, and ignoring the pain and suffering that some people have gone through for years and years and years and years and when they're horribly injured. But I think people do things without thinking, let's put it that way. Hams have always attempted to work things out among themselves. We've always been a self-regulating hobby to that extent. I think people who rush off to court at the drop of a hat are bad operating on all cylinders. This takes a few hours of research in the law library, and I guess people think that they can become experts at this whole process. It's an unfortunate thing for amateur radio. I don't know what the real solution is to it.
Consider the following scenario. In the Midwest, repeater A has operated on a given frequency for years and was coordinated by XYZ Frequency Council, the only bona fide frequency coordinator at that time in that geographical area. Today, however, repeater B goes online on that same frequency pair 50 miles from repeater A, and as specified under the parameters of a newly formed special usage frequency coordinator, repeater B has agreed to transmit with 5 watts or less to keep co-channeling interference with repeater A to a minimum. Now that the FCC no longer recognizes any one frequency coordinator as serving a geographical area exclusively as a result of the Kowalski letter of last December, what legal recourse does repeater A have to force repeater B off its pair, other than in a case of proven deliberate malicious interference? Jim O'Connell.
I don't think that repeater A has any legal recourse whatsoever. The reason I say that is just simply because the accommodation with the 5 watts output on repeater B, the steps that repeater A could take, including PL for its members, PL on its input to protect itself, simply being coordinated does not give you the right to attempt to cover an entire geographic area on days when the tropo is working and, you know, the skip is in, so to speak, on 2 meters. I don't think there's any recourse at all, absent malicious and proven interference. But unless repeater A had taken all of the steps, including PL transmit and PL receive on its receivers, I don't think that there'd be any possible cause of action. I think they'd just be wasting their money. And certainly the defense for repeater B is there are no exclusive frequencies. We are coordinated and have taken the necessary steps to do all possible to protect a reasonable coverage for repeater A, and I think that's all that's necessary. In the Chicago area, reasonable coverage is full quieting signal into the repeater, I think, from a 10-watt mobile. Anything, when you start talking about reasonable coverage, is everybody running 100 watts, the collinear antennas, and not being able to hear anybody else on the frequency. I don't think that's reasonable.
Has the day come and gone for a repeater to have reasonable expectations of no interference on its input from the user of another repeater on the same pair?
In the Midwest, where we don't have 8,000-foot mountains, I think, yes, there's no reason that one should expect to be able to cover the entire northern half of the state of Illinois and be the only repeater on that frequency. It just doesn't make sense. There isn't sufficient spectrum. Easy and simple steps can be taken to prevent the interference. You know, we got FM, the strongest signal captures the receiver, and certainly where you get PL lockout. But to expect to be able to drive out 150 miles from the repeater and still be able to get in and not have anybody locally interfere with you is just, it's ridiculous.
Under what conditions will the FCC become involved, where two repeaters, coordinated in the same geographical area, but by separate frequency coordinators, experience co-channel interference?
Well, that's the problem that the Kowalski letter causes. And I think at that point the commission might become involved, certainly to require the coordinators to work together to eliminate the problem. But the big question is, what's interference? It's hard to define. Certainly it's not something that the commission wants to get into if it can avoid it. The commission is very unhappy about becoming involved, and I don't think it should have to become involved. That's asking government to help you out is asking for an awful lot of problems. The commission's made it very clear that it doesn't want to become involved. You can say what you will about the Kowalski letter, but that's pretty clear that they were not interested in becoming involved in this type of silly amateur radio bickering, as I call it.
And finally, does Jim O'Connell feel the current rash of lawsuits will be the undoing of the amateur service?
Well, I don't know that's the case. To the extent that the commission has not made a defendant in these type of lawsuits, it's not a real problem. To the extent that we take our problems to court and ask someone who has no expertise at all in the area to make a decision, we're liable to get some rulings we don't like. I proposed a number of years ago that the commission or some national organization set up a system of national arbitration where you would have three amateurs, perhaps all three would be volunteer counsel or lawyers and that sort of thing, who would come and arbitrate with binding arbitration when these kind of repeater disputes broke out. But the commission didn't want to get into it at the time, and I still think it's a better idea than going to court. But the question is, would people agree to abide by it? I don't know. It certainly would make it a lot easier and a lot cheaper and have some expertise in the hobby and what we're talking about involved in settling the dispute rather than going to court. Any fool can file a lawsuit, and from the looks of it lately, we've got a good number of fools in amateur radio who rush off to court to file a lawsuit and puts everybody to a lot of trouble, and I hope that people have the money to pay for doing it. But, you know, some of these guys do it without a lawyer and think they're geniuses. Unfortunately, the courts don't impose enough sufficient penalties on people who bring groundless lawsuits, but not much you can do about it. I get calls all the time from people, and they want to know, gee, you know, I'm hearing another sis, or somebody said that about me, and, you know, let's sue them. You know, that's just silly. Caution all your listeners, don't bother to call me up with that kind of silly thing, because I get real mean on the telephone.
This has been the Rain Weekly Spotlight, this week featuring Jim O'Connell, W9WU. I'm Hap Holly, KC9RP in Chicago.
This is Classic Rain Hamcast number 24. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. Next, we'll bring you a guest commentary written and read by former Rain scriptreader Angelo Polveri, KA9CSO. Hap Holly, KC9RP, will introduce this commentary after we break for station ID. This is Classic Rain Hamcast number 24. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Classic Rain from www.therainreport.com.
Typically, today's novice must wait 6 weeks and more for his or her first call sign. But why? That's what Angelo Polveri, KA9CSO, wants to know in the following editorial.
Suppose there is a person who wants to become an amateur radio operator. The ham fraternity would surely welcome that person with open arms, provide him with opportunities for classes, many of them free, make it easy and comfortable for him to be examined, and then be anxious and willing to get that person started in an active way on the air. But after going through the above and excitedly learning that he has passed the tests, the would-be ham finds he has to wait 6 to 8 weeks before he can use his new earned privileges and new learned skills. He has to wait until the FCC processes his application and sends him back his actual license. The process is purely perfunctory and clerical, there being no doubt whatsoever that he will eventually receive his ticket. Unfortunately, during this seemingly interminable wait, enthusiasm wanes, skills are dulled, if not lost altogether, and knowledge is forgotten. If it were in the power of the FCC to process the paper more quickly, they would. It simply takes that long to process the paperwork. It takes that long to process a pilot's license and almost any other license issued by the federal government. If it were in the power of the ham fraternity to hasten the process, surely it would gladly do so. The wait is not designed to do anything positive for the applicant or good for society. It's just a fact of life in a bureaucracy. So why don't we try to figure out a way to solve this problem the same way we come up with improved designs for Colpitts oscillators? Why don't we take a lesson from other Lysing cases? A person passes his test to be an airplane pilot and instantly begins using his privileges. The examiner gives him a temporary document to use if the need arises. Volunteer amateur radio examiners give temporary documents when a licensed amateur upgrades, and instantly that person can begin to use his new privileges. But in the case of the pilot and the upgraded operator, they can be identified and pursued if need be while using those privileges. The pilot by his airplane identification number, and the radio operator by his previous call sign followed by a temporary designator. But how can we easily provide a person who has just passed his novice exams with such an identification? Simple. Let the novice use the call sign of his examiner followed by a temporary designator. Let the designator be unique. For example, the first novice that I might authorize to do so would bear my call sign with the designator N1. KA9CSO, temporary N1. The second one would be N2. In the case of CW, the call sign would be followed by a slash and then the N number. It would be my responsibility to keep a record of the names and addresses of those granted the designators in case the FCC or an official observer wished to pursue a new novice. If there were to be any hesitation whatsoever on my part to have someone using my call sign, I should not be signing his 610 form in the first place. The novice's 610 form, by the way, would also show the call sign and designator that was assigned to him. Now, there is sure to be someone who will say that this would allow unauthorized persons to use my call sign with a designator. Well, if such a person exists, wouldn't they use my call sign anyway without the designator? If a person is going to fly an airplane without a license, aren't they going to do so whether or not another person has a temporary document? If a technician is bent on operating in the advanced portion of the bands, won't he do so whether or not another person is using a temporary designator? Such a system as I propose is simple, easy to administer and monitor, and capable of very quickly being put into effect. Think of the happy novices, filled with enthusiasm and skill, making their first contact minutes after passing their exams. Think of the proud examiner hearing his call sign being used by the happy ham. Think of the admiration and respect the examiner would garner from his fellow hams, and the motivation that might ensue for them to Elmer, a would-be ham. In such a wonderfully rewarding hobby like ours, one that provides so much good to society in times of emergency, we should be using more of our time, effort, and ingenuity to devise ways of letting good and willing people in and doing it quickly. I'm Angelo Polveri, KA9CSO.
Fortunately, waiting for a new ham license today is far shorter. Remember when Radio Shack announced its stores were getting into the ham radio business? Here's a short ham radio news item about that from 1988, introduced by another former RAIN script reader, Scott Childers, W9CHI.
How would you like to be able to walk into a service merchandise or a Radio Shack store and pick up a 10-meter transceiver? It may be possible in a few months. Here's Nina, KA9WJZ, with the story.
According to the latest issue of W5YI Report and Radio Activities, both Uniden and Tandy Radio Shack appear to be ready to market 10-meter transceivers. Uniden is well known for their line of Bearcat scanners and many other consumer electronic items. The Uniden HR2510 will be a 25-watt 28.000 to 29.899 megahertz upper sideband, lower sideband, CW AM/FM rig with bells and whistles, retailing at $399. Tandy would not confirm or deny that they have a 10-meter transceiver in the works, stating that it is a company policy not to comment on new products until they are available. Although a Uniden official said that their policy will be to promote the rig to the licensed amateur market, There is a concern that unit and distributors, with their strong presence at truck stops and in many consumer areas, may be less than selective about whom they gear their advertising towards. This is Nina, K9WJZ.
And that concludes Classic Rain number 24, posted July 25th, 2020. Don't miss the QSO Today Virtual Ham Expo, scheduled for Saturday, August 8th and Sunday, August 9th. More than 13,000 attendees have registered for it at press time, and 70 forum speakers are scheduled to speak during the two-day virtual expo. And HAP is scheduled to have a small booth there. Check out this virtual ham expo the weekend of August 8th and 9th at qsotoday.com. That's qsotoday.com. The Classic Rain Hamcast is copyright 1987-2020 Rain. All rights reserved. Transmit this hamcast if you like, but please do so in its entirety. Classic Rain Hamcast 25 will post August 8, 2020. Now for the retired founder of the Radio Amateur Information Network, Hap Holly, KC9RP, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73. Keep on hamming.